We send people off to prison to atone for their crimes. We still and probably always disagree about whether they should just stay out of society or whether they should rehabilitate and be better for society when their time is up. But we're clear that prison is not a place with the comforts of home, and some of the comforts a few prisoners had come to expect are being taken away. Several states once offered family and conjugal visits, a chance for prisoners to interact in a real way with their loved ones. But the list of states grows shorter over time, a trend examined by Sylvia A. Harvey in a recent issue of The Nation in partnership with the Investigative Fund of The Nation Institute. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Sylvia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So this is in part, I understand, about your life. Tell us about your visits to Soledad as a kid.
Well, you know, for me, the personal story is sort of what opened the door to this, right? So just thinking about how those visits were invaluable to me as a child naturally led to my curiosity about the history of those programs. So when I learned that they were being cut, I thought, how is it possible that these children are going to connect with their parents? Now that these visits are being taken away, will they have the opportunity that I had? So in thinking about my opportunity and thinking about how I was able to have a close bond with my father during those visits, I really thought about what that means for the children that are now having those taken away. So using my story, it's just it's a micro story, but to look at a macro issue and look at all the children that are being affected by this, and some of those children are highlighted in my story.
Well, it's interesting to think because we often look at the sheer numbers of prisoners. We do incarcerate more people than any other country on earth with more than 2 million people. But this amounts to, at last count, which I guess is about 5 years plus old now, 2.7 million kids with parents inside.
Right. So imagine that number. We're thinking about currently it's 1 in 28 children compared to 1 in 125 about 30 years ago. So the number has just grown astronomically, and I think that we haven't paid enough attention to this demographic. Like, it's a demographic that they can't really speak for themselves. They don't have the voice to say, this is something that is meaningful for us. This is something that we need. This is something that has a huge impact on my life, and I don't think that we've paid attention to that. I think that we've paid attention to the people that are incarcerated, but we haven't thought about what that does to the family. 1 out of 57 white children have an incarcerated parent, but 1 out of 9 black children have a parent behind bars. I think that that's just something we can't ignore that fact.
I want to give a real flavor for what the family visits were and are like. I mean, we're not talking about in the day room facing each other across the table. These are actually getting to exist as a family for a day or two, isn't it?
Yeah, we're talking about a visit where you literally get to go in, and in Mississippi in particular, the visits were between 4 and 5 days. So imagine you have 4 days. For Christmas, you can bring a Christmas tree. For Thanksgiving, you can bring, you know, the traditional foods that you cook, and the child can sit there and have a conversation with their parent. They can talk about, you know, what's happening on the outside. They can share in a Christmas, or they can share in just a regular conversation. You get to wake up in the morning and you see your parent that you haven't seen for, you know, who knows how long it's been, but that moment is sort of ingrained in your life. You're like, hey, I'm here, and this is like being home. There's everything that you could ask for. You have your family, you have, you know, access to books and television and playgrounds. Like, the child in my book learned, or not in the book, I'm sorry, in the story, learned to fish with his dad on prison grounds. I mean, that's something that he's never going to forget.
And we're talking not just family visits, but conjugal visits for couples as well were part of the scene, too. And not as many states, not everybody offered those, correct?
Right. Not every state offered conjugal visits. Mississippi is actually very unique in that sense. They did offer the visits for married couples once a week. For about 1 hour, and that was also recently cut. So there's an idea that, you know, we're focusing so much on what it means to have a conjugal visit. I think that we focus so much on sex that we've forgotten what a lot of the characters say in the story, that it's about bonding. It's about having the moment to just talk in private, having the moment to have a discussion about your children, about the well-being of your marriage. And, you know, that's something that has been taken away in Mississippi. But, again, that was a very unique scenario where they didn't have conjugal visits in other states. Other states had family visits where it was always, you know, the idea of the family unit, and it could also be siblings. You know, it could be your parent, it could be didn't have to just be your partner.
Sylvia Hartley is a contributor to The Nation. She wrote a story about kids with parents in prison, appearing in the cover of the December 1421 edition of the magazine, reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund of The Nation Institute. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about prisoners and families and what is right and appropriate and what's humane and not. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So here again, family visits, conjugal visits, I notice, still exist in California and Washington, on both sides of Oregon, but not in Oregon itself. And family visits were, I don't know, not even half the states, it sounds like, it allowed those.
Right. Well, what exists currently in Washington and New York and California are actually family visits. So if you don't have children, then, of course, you can still have a visit with your spouse. But the idea is that you could also have the same visit with your brother or with your sister or with your mother. So those visits that currently still exist are family visits. Okay. I think the idea of conjugal is something that was, it's really just, it's a misnomer.
Okay, fair enough.
Unless we're talking about Mississippi, where they literally have one-hour visits.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure, isn't it? On a one-hour visit,
yeah.
Was the eligibility universal, Sylvia, or did an inmate's sentence and behavior inside figure in whether they were allowed to participate in these or not?
Yeah, well, in particular in Mississippi, you had to be a minimum or medium security prisoner, and you had to demonstrate good behavior and be free of any sex-related crime. So we're talking about a very small population. You can't have any sex-related crimes. You can't have gotten into any trouble in the last 6 months. So, it was a small number, but these people worked really hard to get the privilege, and the same is true for most other states.
And so what is the trend now? I mean, it sounds like they're being cut back generally. When did the cutback start and why?
Well, it looks like we started to see a reverse in the 1990s. It seemed to happen when there was like a more punitive approach that took hold in corrections. In 1994, President Bill Clinton signed the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act. And that act, implemented mandatory minimum sentences. It widened the death penalty, limited amenities and services for prisoners, including higher education. So after that, the No Frills Prison Act also eliminated what they consider to be prison frills. So frills are considered, maybe weightlifting equipment or unmonitored phone calls or hot plates and personal clothing. So you just saw a decline. The times changed and the approach to corrections became significantly more punitive, and you just saw state after state start to eliminate a program that was, even from the beginning, extraordinarily progressive.
You write in the article that that some of this is explained as well to overcrowding and budget cuts, but you also say that there were some racist ideas about black sexuality in here that figured in the family and conjugal visits in the first place. What does that mean?
Right. Well, I think if we think about when these visits started in 1918. And the idea was David Oshinsky's book, Worse Than Slavery, Parchment Farm and the Ordeal of Jim Crow Justice, he talks about the concept of black men, right? And he talks about the correctional officers and what they've said. And there's so many quotes in there. One says, give them some pork, some greens, some cornbread, and some poontang every now and then, and they would work for you, right? So the idea was, how do we make these men work hard for us at this time? How do we get the most that we can get from these people? And this is in 1918. It wasn't until 1930s that white men were allowed these same visits. In 1972, that women were allowed these visits. So if you bring that up to today, racism is clouding the discussion. It's making people more callous to these families' needs. And we're looking at them as though they're an expendable demographic. There's 13% black people in the population, but they make up 40% of incarcerated people. And in Mississippi, blacks are incarcerated 3.5 times as whites. They're 37% of the population and 61.4% of prisoners. And the former commissioner said directly that these visits were being taken away in part because the fear of the babies that are being produced out of these visits. So there's an assumption that we're going to produce these children, and now these children are going to go and they're going to be in single family homes, and we're going to be left as a society to take care of them. But that's not true. That's not accurate. That's an assumption that is just not justified.
You couldn't find any evidence of a prisoner baby boom?
No, and they didn't have any evidence of that, or they would have showed us. But clearly there are children that were born in, you know, these visits. Some of them are in my story. If we talk about Keyshawn Green, he's 20 years old now, and he was born during either a conjugal visit or a family visit. But he's an extraordinary kid. His mother is doing great. She's been college educated. She's been a nurse for the last 30 years. She has her own home. This is someone that's taking care of her child. We're talking about children that may have been conceived in prison or during a visit, but they're still sort of functioning contributions to society. So who are we to say we don't want to allow that? How can you police the idea of having children?
I love the statement by Keyshawn Green's mom. It's like, I was 40 at the time. I didn't expect this.
Right. Like, who was thinking of having another child? Like, at 40, she thought she was done. But, you know, she said, what do you do? You're here, and it's a blessing. She was like, I was able to take care of him. I didn't have to go on welfare. That's what she said to me. And that's important, is that you have what it takes to take care of your child and give him the best possible life there is.
Sylvia Harvey's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a contributor to The Nation. She wrote a story about kids with parents and loved ones with inmates in prison in The Nation in the December issue, in a December issue. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about family visits for prison inmates. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Did the change in policy starting in the 90s that you point out in the article, did that happen while you were still a child visiting your own father in prison?
Yeah, our visits, I think, stopped in 95 or 96. I was a teenager at that point, so at that point I was already 16. But yeah, the visits were taken away in California because they were taken away from particular demographics. I think that's when they decided that they were going to get tougher on who was allowed these visits. So my father happened to be a part of the population that they said, okay, these people can't have visits. Now, if you're a lifer and you don't have a date to go home, then the idea is that you don't need to acclimate to home life. There's the assumption you're never returning home, so why do you need to practice life? Why do you need to have the idea of home temporarily 4 times a year if we don't expect that you'll go home? Now, obviously, my father did return home, so those visits would have been very helpful for him, but, you know, they were taken away.
How jarring was it to you as a fan, and to you in particular? If you're 16 years old, your use for your parents is somewhat limited by that point, was my experience with teens, but it still was being cut off from something you had access to.
Yeah, it was one of those things where you're like, I think I had gotten into the habit of really seeing things been taken away, right? I think that when you're a child that has a parent incarcerated, you constantly see things being removed and taken away, and you recognize that there's very little freedom that you have. Everything that you get is a privilege, and you recognize that because your parents incarcerated, and the way they think about you and the way they think about what you need in terms of access, they get to decide. So you think about that, and you say, well, what can I do? How can I remedy this? And it was just a matter of, you know, as soon as I turn 18, I'm going to visit you as much as I can. And I did. I got my own car and I went and I visited him, and we sent letters and we had phone conversations, and we continued to build, because that's what you have to do. You have to fight back.
Has there been any effect outside of the visitation on things like phone calls and letters and emails? Any further restrictions on those? I know a couple of county jails in Oregon have gone to postcards only, where you can't actually have foldable closing mail.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't heard that one. I do know that there's been a lot of limitations, like in terms of when you do go to visit, you used to be able to take a photograph, a family photograph, but that doesn't sort of happen now. And I think that what really is happening is that maybe there's a larger delay in the time that you get the mail. I talked to Linda Green, and she had sent pictures to her husband, and they hadn't arrived for 2 months. So it's really just a huge delay. But we're also seeing the sort of rise of visits that are televisits. So they're taking visits away bit by bit, and then before you know it, there'll only be visits that are on screen. So there will be no more in-person visits. So it's just bit by bit you see small things being taken away.
I know you talked to some people for the article who espoused the general argument that people in prison did bad things and do not deserve rewards like being able to spend nights with families. Is that a fairly prevalent opinion you found?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly a huge demographic of people that say, listen, these people are they're incarcerated for a reason. They're criminals. But I think the problem is we're not recognizing that being incarcerated is the actual punishment. We're not even talking about rehabilitation. If we're talking about punishment, we already recognize that you have to serve 25 years in prison. So you've already had your freedom taken away. So the thought that now that you're here, we want to make sure you have the worst food, we want to make sure you have the worst health, we want to make sure you have no access to your family. But we're not thinking about what that means for society when these people come home. So I think the people that are really against this, we should consider, what does it mean to deprive someone of a human touch or a private conversation or, you know, the holding of a hand? And what happens to those people when they come home? Because most of them will come home. And what are we doing? Are we rehabilitating them or are we not? What is our role as society?
Without family visits, the kind of contact the prisoners get with their families is limited to something like 15 seconds in the visit room at the prison, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean
the physical contact
could be, 15 seconds could be a stretch. Like, you know, I'm thinking about the time that we had, but when I count 15 seconds out loud, it's probably certainly less than that. So you go in and that's it. So you better hurry up and get your hug, but you can't do anything else. I know there have been times where I'm in the room with my father and I can't console him after my brother has died. How is it possible that I can't put my hand on yours because you're fearful that I'm going to give you drugs? But this is a prisoner that you're already going to strip search when they leave. So I think that we really need to recognize how visitation works and what we're doing to the families of the people that are incarcerated.
We'll take a couple minutes here on the Jefferson Exchange talking to Sylvia Harvey, who's a contributor to The Nation and wrote this story about kids with parents in prison. Appears on the cover of the December 1421 edition of The Nation. Join us on The Exchange with comments and questions at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Your building's not about to burn down there, is it, Sylvia? I'm getting concerned about the sirens.
I know. New York is so bad. I was just saying that, like, literally every 5 minutes there is an ambulance. I don't know what's happening here.
Okay. Well, glad you're safe anyway. You slipped and called this a book before. Is it turning into a book at some point?
No, it's not. It was definitely just a slip.
Okay. What kinds of analysis have been performed on the effect of family visits on prisoner behavior and recidivism and things like that?
Well, most of the evaluations have taken place. We've looked at regular day visits, and the day visits have proven consistently that they reduce recidivism. So we're looking at Minnesota and Florida. There have been really big studies that say these prisoners, after having a certain number of visits, have a reduced recidivism. Like, their likelihood of returning to prison is significantly reduced, but that's not something that we're paying close attention to when we consider whether or not they should have visits.
Is there a similar analysis on the effect on families? I'm curious to know about the likes of Keyshawn Green, who was conceived during a conjugal visit to prison and got to know his father essentially through the bars.
You know, there hasn't been much of any study that takes place that really looks at children or families and the sort of bond that does or doesn't exist with the imprisoned person. The only thing that really has been a huge focus is how have these visits reduced recidivism. So we haven't looked at whether or not it really increases the connectivity between the family, or if it, you know, all we have is anecdotal evidence for that. No one has taken up the study to say, let's see what it really means for these people to have visits. What does that look like, and what does that do to the family structure? There hasn't been any statistical references for that.
Now, here again, when we talk about family visits, which is actually spending time alone together in a place where they can actually touch each other and act like a family for a while, was always a shorter list of states. They did not all allow it. The federal system has never apparently allowed some visits, but I understand from your article that the feds are doing some research on the effect of family visits. Is that true?
Well, no, so what they're doing, so we're talking about government action. So the White House created a federal interagency working group, and it's children of incarcerated parents. So what they're doing is evaluating the federal programs and policies that impact the children. So mostly looking at the different states or the different programs they have at a federal level that could or could not be of assistance to these to these children. So there hasn't been anything done aside from let's look at what works. You know, let's look at what it means to have Sesame Street introducing Alex, which is a Muppet that has a father that is incarcerated. So what does having that kind of public education mean for children? So they're sort of looking at things like that. So there's part that's being done, but we're still looking at the fact that there isn't enough being done directly from a federal program's perspective. Like the Department of Justice awarded $53 million in grants to reduce recidivism in 2015, but only three of those grants, which was a little over $1 million, were directly for children of incarcerated parents. So we're thinking about how do we work with these children directly as a very, you know, particular demographic.
Is the movement to restore or establish family visits, does it have any particular political oomph? And it sounds like it faces some fairly steep odds.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is in Mississippi, you know, they're very grassroots oriented. So there's tons of, you know, small organizations that are getting together that are working. You have the Mississippi Southern Bells. You have Mississippi Prisoners Watch. So there are a lot of different grassroots organizations that are working to have some of the privileges that have been taken away reinstated. Even now they're thinking about removing the canteen from Mississippi prisoners. So they're doing the work every day. And I think that although it's been removed from you know, the prisons, it's not illegal. It's not something that the state has deemed to be illegal. It's not something they've put into law and said no more visits. There's still hope for these families. There's still hope for the state.
All right. We will see down the road what happens. It's a very illuminating article and worth a read. Sylvia Harvey's a contributor to The Nation. She wrote this story about kids with parents in prison and shared some of her findings with us here today in The Exchange. Sylvia, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.